Second Bible reading this morning is Psalm 121. Psalm 121. I thought I'd continue on in some of the mornings in May when our minister Ian Hamilton is away, looking at some of the popular or common psalms that are well known, but perhaps we maybe don't know them as well as we think we do. And so this morning we look at Psalm 121. A song of ascent. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. Life is tough, but so are you. It's a quote I came across this week. Life is tough, but so are you. I thought the first part was refreshingly honest. Life is tough. Sure, there are moments of fun and happiness, but there are also hard and sad moments. Life is tough. There's the daily routine of just having to get through your to-do list, but then add to that the daily experiences of life. The relational problem with that colleague at work, the longing for companionship or marriage, the hidden pain of infertility that comes month after month after month, the worry over a particular child or a restrained relationship with a parent, the boredom of an uninspiring job, the financial constraints because of a lack of a job, the hassle involved in moving house or country, the physical aches and pains of old age or a chronic illness, that issue in your marriage which you just keep arguing over, the heaviness of depression or the panic of anxiety. The daily experiences of life make life hard going at times. Life can be tough. And then there are the unforeseen crises of life. The sad news of some terrible illness, the breakdown in a relationship, the shock of a death of a loved one. The daily routine of life is hard. The daily experiences of life are hard going. The unforeseen crises of life are heartbreaking. Life is tough. I think the first part of that quote is refreshingly honest. Life is tough. Sure, it's fun sometimes, but it's also tough. Who here who's lived a little would disagree with that? The question is, what do we do with the second part of the quote? Life is tough, but so are you. So are you. The first part is refreshingly honest. The second part is incredibly telling. Not because I think it's true, but because it captures an underlying attitude of our secular culture, and that is that you have the resources within yourself to deal with all that life throws at you. Life is tough, sure it is, but so are you. It's like that classic song by Billy Ocean, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Statements like that reveal one of the pillars of our secular culture, human self-sufficiency. There are two pillars to our secular culture, human autonomy and human self-sufficiency. Human autonomy says you are independent, you are self-determining, you are self-ruling, you're the master of your fate, the captain of your soul. That's human autonomy. But then there's the other pillar of human self-sufficiency. You have everything within yourself, to be who you want to be, to do what you want to do, to overcome whatever life throws at you. Life is tough, sure it is, but so are you. And if there's one thing this psalm does for us this morning, is that it affirms the first part of that quote and denies the second part. The psalm concerns normal life. If you glance down at verse 3, it refers to a foot. It's a picture of a journey that we're on. Verses 8, in verse 8, it speaks of goings and comings. It's normal life. But the psalm affirms that normal life is tough. Verse 3, the foot can slip. There are slip-ups and setbacks. Verse 6, the sun and the moon can strike us. Verse 7, there is evil all around us. So this is normal life, life under the sun and moon life, everyday life. But it's life that is dangerous and difficult. It's life that is tough. The psalm affirms that. But here's the big difference. Our culture says life is tough, but so are you. This psalm says life is tough, but our help is in the Lord. Life is tough, but our help is in the Lord. The world tells us to be self-sufficient. This psalm tells us to be God-dependent. And the psalm does this in two ways. First, life is tough, but the Lord is our helper. Life is tough, but the Lord is our helper. Verses 1 to 2. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. The logic of verse 1 has been interpreted in different ways. Some people think that the hills have an ominous tone to them. Hills were places of danger where thieves and robbers would lie as you made your mountain pass. Or hills were places of idolatry, where idols were worshipped on high places. But I don't think the hills carry that negative connotation here. The hills in Israel, especially Jerusalem, had a far more positive connotation. John Calvin thinks that the hills symbolize might and strength. And so the logic here is contrastive. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come from? Well, not from something even so mighty and great as the hills. No, it comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. But I don't think that the hills are meant here in a contrastive sense. I think it's better to view them in a complementary sense. And to see that, let's just look back at the title of the psalm. You see that in capital letters? A song of ascents. Psalm 120, Psalm 134 are 15 psalms of ascents. There's some debate as to what the ascent refers to, but I think the most sensible interpretation is that the songs of ascents refer to the songs that the pilgrims sang as they walked up to Jerusalem each year for different festivals. These psalms were sung as they looked up to the hills of Jerusalem. If you've ever been to Israel, you know that Jerusalem is set on the top of a range of mountains. When you fly into Tel Aviv on the coast and you travel to Jerusalem, it is just one long, slow incline, up, 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 up to Jerusalem. Your eyes are lifted up to the hills of Jerusalem. And in the Old Testament, where did God live? On the hill of Jerusalem. And this psalmist is saying, I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? From the God who lives in the hills. Certainly the hills of Jerusalem have a positive sense in Psalm 125, if you just flick forward to that. Verse 2, as the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forevermore. Hills have a positive complementary connotation here. Our help is in the hills, in the God who lives in the hills. But in order to make sure we don't just domesticate God to the hills of Jerusalem as if he's just a local deity, the psalmist adds, the Lord who made the heavens and the earth. The God of the hills is the God of heaven and earth. Heaven and earth here is what's called a merism in poetry. Two parts that speak of the whole. Heaven and earth denote everything. The Lord who made everything lives in the hills of Jerusalem. Now, boys and girls, I wonder if you know a big word that summarizes that God made everything. You ever come across a word like that? Shout it out. Omnificent. One of our four big words. If you get the four words and the definitions, you get a fiver after church. Omnificent. God made everything. And boys and girls, that's why he can help us with anything. Because he made everything. Our help is in God the Omnificent. God can only be the helping God if he is first the creating God. The reason why the gods of other religions cannot help people is first and foremost because they did not create the heavens and the earth. The gods of the nations are created, not creator. They are made, not maker. This is why they cannot help people, because they were created by people, made by people. But the God of Israel, the Christian God, the God whose name is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, is able to help people because of this one basic fundamental reason. He made everything. And if you're the God who is before everything and you make everything, then you can help people in anything. God Omnificent is our helper. And that is what we need to remember, brothers and sisters. Whatever happens in our lives, whatever life throws at us, whatever life gets tough, our help is in the Lord who made heaven and earth. So easy when life gets tough, isn't it, to look in or around to others instead of out and up. So easy to experience some difficulty in life, say with a child, and turn to Google before we turn to God. The first thing the psalm says to us this morning is don't look in and down when life gets tough. Look out and up to the God who is omnificent, who made everything, and therefore can help us with anything. That is where our help lies. Life is tough, but the Lord is our helper. That's the first thing this psalm tells us. And secondly, life is tough, but the Lord is our keeper. Life is tough, but the Lord is our keeper. Verses 3 to 8. It's important to note that verses 3 to 8 here are not a prayer for protection. And none of this psalm is directed to God. You notice that? It's not a prayer for protection. It is a promise of protection. And the promise is made sure by the Lord who is our keeper, our guard, our protector. That's the key word that keeps coming up in this psalm. Six times we see the word keep or keeper. Verse 3, he who keeps you will not slumber. Verse 4, behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Verse 5, the Lord is your keeper. Verse 7, the Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in. Life is tough, but the Lord is our keeper. And this psalm shows us four ways in which he is our keeper. First, the Lord is our personal keeper. He is our personal keeper. Did you notice how the psalm shifts from the first person in verses 1 and 2 to the second person, verses 3 to 8? Some think it's the antiphonal singing, verses 1 and 2, sung by one group of pilgrims, verses 3 to 8, sung by another group, and they go back and forth. That's possible. Or verse 1 to 2 was sung by the king, and verses 3 to 8 was sung by the priest or the people to the king. In either case, the psalm becomes deeply personal here. The words you or your are repeated over and over and over. But boys and girls, you can help me here. I'm going to read out a number of verses, and I want you to count on your hands. Okay? How many times you hear the word your or you. Okay, you ready? He will keep your foot. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not stumble. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in. How many? Ten. 10 times in 6 verses we're told that the Lord is your keeper. Psalm 121, boys and girls, is a bit like that great kid's song. You know the one who's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole wide world in his hands. Well, that's verses 1 and 2. He's the maker of everything. He's got the whole world in his hands. And you know the second verse of that chorus? He's got you and me, brother, in his hands. He's got you and me, sister, in his hands. That's verses 3 to 8. He is your keeper. He's got the whole world in his hands. And he has you in his hands. The Lord is our personal keeper. The creator of the universe is our personal bodyguard. Well, second, the Lord is our persistent keeper. He's our personal keeper and he's our persistent keeper. Verses 3 to 4. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The foot slipping here is not merely referring to tripping up on a path and causing yourself some injury. I would be to suggest that Christians are not exposed to the normal accidents and tragedies of life. But we know from experience that we are. No, rather, the foot slipping here in the Old Testament can speak of someone falling off the path to eternal ruin. Psalm 73 speaks of God setting the wicked in slippery places so that they are swept away and utterly destroyed. And the promise here is that that will never happen to a Christian. You will never slip away and be utterly destroyed. And the reason why is because the Lord is your persistent keeper. He does not slumber or sleep. There may be a bit of a progression here in those verbs. Slumber might be like dropping off for a nap after a heavy meal. And sleep here might be referring to deep sleep. Or the two verbs are just synonymous. But in either case, they convey the same thing. God's protective care of us never stops. It covers night. It covers day. God never nods off. Never has a micro sleep. Reference to Israel in verse 4 indicates that he is not just creator, but also redeemer. God redeemed his son Israel out of Egypt. So the reference to Israel here doesn't take away from the personal nature of God's protection of us. He is the keeper of Israel as well as the Israelite. He keeps the church as well as the Christian. And indeed, the nation of Israel finds its fulfillment in an Israelite. God's own son, Jesus Christ. So we should not draw too sharp a distinction here between the corporate and the individual. Both are personal. The Lord is our persistent keeper as a church. And and as a Christian, just as he was for Christ. This is why as a church and as a Christian we can enjoy our sleep. Our sleep can be sweet, because God does not sleep. You know, when you sleep, you're at your most vulnerable. People could come into your house and do anything to you when you're asleep. You're at your most vulnerable when you sleep. Alexander the Great, king of ancient Greece, was once asked why he slept so well on his military campaigns. In those days, for a king to sleep in his tent in the midst of a war was a great risk. While he slept, the enemy could come in and kill him. While he slept, one of his own men could betray him and kill him. But he was asked, why do you sleep so well? And he said, because Parmenion does not sleep. Parmenion was his personal bodyguard. Because he never slept, Alexander the Great slept very well, even in the midst of a battle. And it's similar for us. Our sleep can be sweet, because God does not sleep. Our anxiety in life can be lessened, because God does not sleep in looking after us. Life is tough, yes, but the Lord is our personal keeper, and he is our persistent keeper. And third, the Lord is our present keeper. The Lord is our present keeper. Verse 5 to 6. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. Now, the reference to the sun and the moon here are a bit intriguing, aren't they? Obviously, the sun and the moon are not known for dropping out of the sky like some meteorite and striking people. So I think it's best to read this metaphorically, just as we did with the hills, verse 1, just as we do with the foot, in verse 3. The sun here is a picture of danger, given what it could do to someone exposed in this climate. The reference to the moon is perhaps to complete the parallelism. Dangers in the daytime ruled by the sun, dangers in the nighttime ruled by the moon. Or the moon could refer to moonstroke. We have sunstroke, but you have moonstroke. It's where a person becomes mentally unstable with imagined danger. But in any case, we get the idea. The sun oversees the influences of the day. The moon oversees the influences of the night. And both periods have danger, real or imagined. And the psalmist says, nothing can strike you in the day or the night. And that's because of verse 5. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shield on your right hand. God keeps us by being present with us. God himself is the shield. Not an angel, not a messenger. God himself comes to walk beside us. Boys and girls, I don't know if you've ever tried to chase someone's shadow. Stand on it on a nice sunny day. You can run outside and you see the other people's shadows. How do you get into someone's shadow? You've got to go close to them. And if they stand between you and the sun, then you can be protected. You can stand in their shade. They get the rays of the sun, but you stand in the shadow. And that's the picture here. It's the picture of God coming right beside us so that we stand in his shadow. Verse 2 speaks of God as creator. And verse 4 speaks of God as redeemer. Well, verse 5 speaks of God as companion. He's the one who comes beside us. So we have a creator, we have a redeemer, and we have a companion. It's a bit like the Trinity, doesn't it? God the Father creates, the Son redeems, and the Spirit is the one who comes alongside us. Here in Psalm 21 is the Holy Trinity incognito. And it's this aspect of God's companionship as our ever-present keeper that is what keeps us from all harm. Life is tough. The Lord is our personal keeper. He is our persistent keeper. And He is, third, our present keeper. And fourth, the Lord is our perpetual keeper. Verses 7 to 8. He is our perpetual keeper. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore. The totality of the care continues. All evil we are kept from, verse 6. He will keep your life, the whole of it, verse 7. He will keep your going out and your coming in, another merism, two parts to communicate the whole. All of our comings and goings in life, from womb to tomb, God is keeping us. His care is total. But it's also perpetual. Did you see that in the closing words? From this time forth and forevermore. God does not keep us in this life, and then when we get to heaven, stop keeping us. When we get to heaven, God's protecting care of us is not over. You could say it's only begun. If I may say it, little Layla and elderly Elsie are safe in the arms of Jesus right now. He did not stop keeping them when they got to heaven. He's still keeping them. He is their perpetual keeper. And so He is ours as well. So those are the four aspects of the Lord is our keeper. He is our personal keeper. He is our persistent keeper. He is our present keeper. And He is our perpetual keeper. And this is the second great truth that this psalm gives us in the midst of life's difficulties. Our culture says, life is tough, but so are you. This psalm says, no, life is tough, but the Lord is our helper. The Lord is our keeper. But in closing, I want to ask, what does the Lord keeping our goings and comings actually mean? What does it mean for God to keep us from all evil, to keep our life? What does it mean that the sun and the moon will not strike us? What does it mean that our foot will not slip? Is this some kind of health, wealth, and prosperity gospel? Is it the Christian life is the trouble-free life? Well, no, we walk along the same paths in life as unbelievers do. Same tragedies happen to us. God doesn't give a new moon or a new sun to the elect. We live under the same sun and under the same moon. We encounter the same evils. Life is tough, whoever you are, wherever you are, and being a Christian doesn't make it less tough. In fact, you could argue it makes it more tough. With the persecution of being a Christian. So what exactly is the psalmist promising here? And it's a promise, not a wish. It's not wishing this for us. He's promising it. So what is it that he is promising? Well, the answer lies in those closing words, from this time forth and forevermore. That's the clue what kind of keeping this is. Let me close by telling you a story of the Vietnamese pastor and translator called Hien. After Vietnam fell in the 1970s, Hien was captured by the Viet Cong and imprisoned and tortured. He was captured, beaten continually. They forced him to clean the toilet latrines and brainwashed him with communist material. Eventually, after some time, he cracked and stopped praying. He forsook Christ and he became an atheist. And then sometime later, one day, the guard put him on latrine duty to clean out the toilets. And as he was cleaning out the toilet, he saw a piece of paper that had been used for toilet paper. And just at the very corner of it, amidst the human excrement, he saw this word, Romans. He picked it up. He rubbed off the excrement, folded it up, and put it in his pocket. That night in the darkness of his cell, he switched on his torch. He read these words. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be against us? He did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. How will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Who will bring any charge against those whom God has chosen? Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble, or hardship, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or danger, or sword? No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor demons, neither the present, nor the future, nor any powers, neither height, nor depth, nor anything in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord. He began to cry, and he said, quote, Lord, you would not let me out of your reach for even a day. That's the keeping of Psalm 121. It's the preservation of God's people in relationship with him, both now and for eternity, come hell or high water. The next day, Hien asked if he could be on latrine duty again. And over the weeks, he recovered the whole book of Romans. His faith was restored. Psalm 121 is to Old Testament saints what Romans 8 is to New Testament saints. It is the assurance that nothing in this life or the next can separate us from the God who has redeemed us in his Son, Jesus Christ. The help and protection promised in Psalm 121 finds its fulfillment in the Good Shepherd who said, my sheep are in my hands, and none shall pluck them from me. Why can Jesus say that? Because this psalm was his experience first. Jesus experienced this as the true Israel. His foot did not slip. He was not struck by any dangers. He was kept from all evil. God kept his life, raised him from the dead. God kept his going out and his coming back in to heaven. Jesus experienced Psalm 121, and that is why the benefits of blessing and protection of this psalm come to us through Christ. Because he is the one who experienced it, and he is now our good shepherd, from whose hand we can never be plucked. Life is tough, but we are not. That is the lie of secular humanistic thinking. We are not tough. Again, as a case in point, when life got tough, he didn't get going, he got broken. But God didn't get broken. God wasn't slumbering over Hien. God didn't sleep over him. Lord, you would not let me out of your reach for even a day. Brothers and sisters, when life gets tough, and it will get tough at times, we do not get tough. When life gets tough, our help is in the Lord. In the heavenly.